We were discussing the mitzvah of emunah based off of the teachings of the Rambam. And I'd like to continue today with the approach of Reb Yehuda Halevi and the Kuzari. Take a look in your source books on page 14. So the Kuzari here is discussing the difference between the Shem Havaya and the Shem Elokim, or specifically relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu with the word or the concept of Elokim, which is just an idea, God, versus a name like the Shem Havaya. Ve'en Shem Shem Meduyak Yoser V'chashuv Yoser Min Hashem HaNechtav Be'osios Yudke Vavke Yisparach V'Yisromam Zehu Shem Prati Bo Romzim Le'eloka Lo B'Tawar HaMakom Kederch Romzim L'chol Mitu'ar Bilti Yadua V'lo B'Ta'arim Nosafim Al Atzmuso V'lo B'Hachlala K'B'Shem HaKlali Elokim Ki Im B'Shem HaMiyuchad Lo Shekein Hu Nikra Shem Al Derech HaYichud Kilu Shoel Mihu Elokim Sheyesh Lavdo Hashemesh, O Yareach, O Hashemayim, O Mazalos, O Echad Min HaKochavim, O Haesh, O Haruach, O Malachim, Haruchaniyim, O Zulasam, Ki Halo L'chol Echad Me'ela Pu'ula Mishalo, V'Shilton Mishalo, V'chol Echad Mehem Siba L'Hisavos Dvarim U'Le'afsam, V'al Zeba HaTshuva Hashem, Ki'ilu Amarta Ploni, V'karasa lo b'shem prati, Ruvain v'shimon l'mashal, b'tenai she'al yedei hashemos Ruvain v'shimon tivada amitus atzmusam. So what's he saying over here? When I refer to someone by a name, Ruvain, Shimon, or the like, so that implies a degree of intimacy, that there's some type of personal encounter. It's not just this concept that I'm aware of, but there's something deeper than that. When, we'll see in a moment, the Kuzari is going to compare referring to God simply as Elohim as the God of Aristotle, something which is totally impersonal. You could prove that it exists. There are proofs. In fact, as the Kuzari is going to say, that is in fact the way initially Avraham Avinu became aware of the Ribono Shel Olam. But that's something very different than taking it to the next step. And the tremendous chiddush of Avraham Avinu is that the relationship he had with HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not just with this impersonal God that can be demonstrated to exist, but it was a personal relationship. There was love, there was fear, and that personal relationship is reflected in the fact that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is referred to by a name, by Hashem. The Rav and affair he distinguished between Adam 1, who only relates to the cosmic God, hence in the first creation narrative the word Elohim is used exclusively, Bereshis Bar Elohim, and Adam 2, who studies the universe with the naivete, etc., etc., he looks for the, I'm just quoting from the Rav, he looks for the image of God not in the mathematical formula or the natural relational law, but in every beam of light, in every bud and blossom, in the morning breeze, and in the stillness of the starlit evening. Skipping a little, while Adam 1 maintains some distance from God, relating merely to the divine endowment of creativity, Adam 2 is a genuine living experience of God, and is preoccupied with him, as evidenced by the metaphor of God breathing life into his nostrils. Elohim denotes God as a source of cosmic dynamics, while the Shem Havaya indicates personal, intimate communion between God and man. And the Kuzari here writes that that was precisely the Chiddush of Avram Avinu. Continues, Amar Kuzari, Eich Ekra B'Shem Miuchad Es She'en Lirmoz Alav V'chol Ra'yaso Alav Mepulosav. The king of the Khazars objects. He says, I don't understand. I know that God exists because I could see the man, his existence from the world. If a world exists, so there must have been a creator. So I see him mipu'ulosav. But what room is there for this relationship? In other words, he doesn't understand this idea. Amar achaver, yesh v'yesh alav remes be'edus hanevuah uveri'as halev. So the first thing to understand is that the value, the importance of nevuah. Nevuah is, as we said, a intimate encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's not just a situation where you know he exists philosophically. Philosophy is something that remains external to a person, but it's something that is in his very essence. He adds here, Uvri'as HaLev. We'll talk about in a moment how exactly to apply Kuzari in the modern world where we don't have Nevuah anymore. But perhaps even Ri'as HaLev isn't just visionary experience as in prophecy, but it's in the emotional knowledge that God exists. Kiavas Rayos Mita'e. Bringing Rayos for God's existence could lead someone astray. Umimena noldu aminos vashitos hanifsados. From the, ironically, the seeking of proof, so that is where heresy is born. Why? So this relates to some of the dangers that we said last time, meaning to say, if all of your knowledge of God is simply from the proofs, so first of all, what kind of religion, what kind of relationship does that lead to? And ultimately, even they won't stand. We'll talk about why that is in a couple of minutes. Let's just skip a little bit to the paragraph beginning Amar Kuzari, where there's a underlined and bold in English text. Amar Kuzari, hine nizbar li hahefresh bein hashemos elokim vashem. The king says, now you've explained to me the difference between the shame of Elokim and Hashem. Vavinosi ma rav hamerchak bein Elokei Avraham uvein Elokei Aristo. Ki lashem yis'ale mishtokekim b'nei Adam shehisiguhu bachosh val yisod edus ha'ri'ya. Hashem relates to the yearning that a person has when they recognize HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'chosh and al pi edus ha'ri'ya. Prophecy is one aspect of that, but it's something that goes beyond or is not limited to prophecy. V'ilu l'elokim notim al pi hekesh egyoni. Relating to Hashem as Elokim just relates to the intellect. It's, as it were, a small part of who we actually are, as opposed to relating to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through all of that we are. Mi shesigu b'chosh lo ba lidei mesiras nefesh mitoch ahavas ha'eloka v'lidei hanechonos lamus aleha. Someone who only knows of God's existence through the intellect will never come to Mesiras Nefesh, because it's not a part of them, even if they know it's true. L'mashal, if a king goes ahead, he makes a rule. Anyone who doesn't declare their belief that a triangle has 182 degrees will be executed. So even though a person knows that a triangle has 180 degrees and the king that made that rule is wrong, but You know that intellectually, and there's no reason why a reasonable person would be no moser nefesh for that belief. But he says when you have this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then you're willing to be moser nefesh. And that's why, of course, it's so important that Avram Avinu, who was mechadesh this derech in Avodas Hashem, was initially tested with Mesiris Nefesh, the story of Or Kasdim, and likewise expressed ultimately his true emuna with the Akedah. As the Akedah Yitzchak points out, from a philosophical perspective, there could be nothing more foolish than being willing to listen to Hashem to offer your own son as a karban. But because of the relationship that Hashem had with Avram and Avram had with Hashem, so that is what made sense. And that was Avram who was mechadesh this derech that had to undergo the nisyonos. Ki achova l'romeim es aloka kosha she'en adavar mazik ve'en sovlim tzara lav. Ein la'ashim efo es aristo al haliglug sheligleg al taksei avodas aloka. If you just come to a perspective of God from proof, so you don't even know what God knows. Vitachen ki ayion hazeh shematzanu b'sefer yitzira hu iuni hu haya iuno shel Avram Avinu sha'a shekfar nisbareru lo achtos aloka raboseinu achterem v'raboseinu Achterem zachal izgalos. Ulam, la'achar shezachal izgalos, azav eskol ha'keshim, v'lo bikesh me'im ha'aloka, ki'im liyos lo l'ratzon. Acharei asher limdu ha'aloka, ma'hu ha'ratzon, ba'me yusag uv'eze makom. U'kfar darshu chachamim ala ma'amar kasuv v'yotze yoseo ha'chutza, tse me'itztagninus shelcha, kilomar azov chachmas ha'kochabim. Avram Avinu, as the Medrash that we cited last week, you see it over here at on the top of page 14, might have indeed originally come to a awareness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu through some type of proof. Yafshar Tomar Shabira Below Manhig. But the point that the Kuzari stresses is the Hemshech of the Medrash. After HaKadosh Baruch Hu, after Avram Avinu discovers that Hashem exists, because there must have been creator, what happens next? Heitzitz alav balabira. Amar lo anochi hu balabira. Kach lefi shaya Avram Avinu omer tomer sha'olam azeb lo manig, heitzitz alav HaKadosh Baruch Hu v'amar lo ani hu bal ha'olam. And the Kuzari says that once Avram Avinu had that personal encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that is Nevuah, so there was no need, no value anymore in the philosophical type proofs that he might have once had. Because, again, as the mashal we cited last week goes, you know, if somebody, if you're in an intimate embrace with your lover, so you don't question, you don't wonder whether or not they exist. There's no purpose. A person can debate, you know, back and forth whether a 747 could theoretically take off. You know, can something that big, that heavy, full of metal fly in the sky? But when you see it, so you see it. There's nothing more to talk about. And the nature, the focus of the relationship changes. And memela then, for us or for any person who develops this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, So then there's no longer any need for the philosophical speculation. So, yeah.
The Kuzari saying that Mesiris Nefesh is only possible if you have Avas Hashem.
If you have a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I wouldn't limit it to Avas Hashem. Mesiris Nefesh in the Akedah is both an expression of Ava and Yira, like the Pasuk says, Atayadati Kirialu, K kimata after the Akedah. The Rambam explains in Mor Nevuchim when describing the Akedah, it was both an act of Ava and Yira, and it was only with both of them together that would lead a person to Mesiras Nefesh or something like the Akedah. So it's not exclusively Ava, but it's this relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu as opposed to simply cerebrally knowing that he exists.
Is the point of Mesiras Nefesh to cultivate that emotional connection or just to kind of bring out?
I think probably both. It's a, what he's highlighting is that it's a reflection of that emotional connection, but I think one could add, though I don't see him saying this, that it also cultivates that relationship. So, yeah.
Is it true saying that the intimate encounter with Hashem, like emotional knowledge, that's enough to make the proof of Hashem completely irrelevant even to start off with? Or it's in order to start off to get to the Nevuah, you have to first have the
Avram Avinu started off with first the intellectual type proofs, and then he cultivated Nevuah and the emotional aspect. Now, the Kuzari isn't saying that everybody needs to do this. This was the path of Avram Avinu. For someone who initially, you know, for the Zera Avram, perhaps they don't have to recreate the wheel. Okay, so when you read Kuzari, there's a very strong emphasis that this relationship-based approach with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is largely rooted in prophecy. And one of the things that one has to consider is where does that leave us in the post-prophetic world? The answer, of course, is that it continues. And how so? So, certainly in many ways. One aspect, I think, that this is particularly powerfully appreciated in is the in Talmud Torah. Let's take a look. Thought I put it here, but I didn't. The Rav Dessler writes in Michtav Meliyahu, Chela Gimel, on page 177, His alus ha'emunah pnimis ba al yedei his amkus b'torah atzma. In other words, learning be'ion. Velo al yedei chakiros ha'seichel mufshatas. One of the most powerful ways in which a person in our world, in the post-prophetic world, encounters HaKadosh Baruch Hu is through Talmud Torah. And Rav Dessler here writes very powerfully how the encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu through the act of Talmud Torah can lead to a certainty of his existence and a relationship with him in a way that philosophical speculation and proof cannot. He writes, Ta'us hi lachshov shiyicholim lasigas amuna hamuchletes al yedei chakiros sichlios philosophia. Hare asecha meshuchad al yedei kol minei negios. First of all, even if a person were to go ahead and say, I only want to know of God's existence through proof, through the intellect. Well, we know that a person's intellect can easily be swayed by negios and the like. So often our intellectual conclusions are really influenced by whatever subconscious direction we seek to achieve. Haratzon matas asechel anshu chefetz. Kshadam ponel sichlo, beterem hisamek betorah, uviseses emunaso al kabalas avos veemunas chachamim veroches asichlo yes shofet habil adi al inyane emunah. Someone who says, I want my seichel alone to be the sole judge about matters of emunah, simanhu she'eno rotzel lahamin. That statement is a siman that doesn't really want to believe, and therefore lachen pona el hashofet mishuchad shiyore lo kirtzono. And therefore he turns to the judge that could lead to that conclusion. You see it a lot in now that whenever you look at the news, politics and the like, one of the most remarkable things is that in politics, if you have a Democrat and a Republican, so the Democrat will support all the things in the Democratic agenda, and the Republican in the Republican agenda, and there's no reason why be'etzem all the, you know, why, just because I'm a, you know, I believe in one thing that the Democrats support, so why should that imply all the other things? There's not really related, many of them. And the answer is that there's an agia, and so you want to support all this, it's in your interest, so everything becomes clear, it all comes together. And So back to what he's saying. So Talmud Torah produces within us knowledge that he exists, which is obviously a very different type of proof than philosophical proofs, but it leads to a situation of no less certainty. Now, it's hard to explain the way in which Talmud Torah creates this experiential knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to someone who hasn't experienced it. If you've experienced it, you learn, everything clicks, you feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence through learning, so that's remarkable. Someone who hasn't experienced that, so if they ask you why you believe, and you tell them, when I learn a Reb Chaim, how could you not believe? So that sounds like lunacy. But it's not. It's just that it's very hard to relate to something that you haven't experienced. And that's true in general when it comes to experiential knowledge. It's something that can produce an incredible level of certainty within the person that experiences it. But at the same time, for the person that hasn't experienced it, so it's not going to be particularly convincing at all. And it's not just Talmud Torah that produces within a person this encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, this emuna. Many mitzvos produce emuna, tefillah certainly. When a person davens properly, I think the Ali Shur points out towards the beginning of Chelek Aleph how someone who davens properly can never have doubts of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's existence. The Stipler used to say to people who would ask him, who had questions about emunah, he would tell them to observe Shabbos bedikduk rav. He said, then your questions will go away. Now, this type of pursuit of experiential proof for God's existence, as opposed to the types of philosophical proof that we were discussing last week, or scientific or the like, is superior, according to the Kuzari, because it doesn't just demonstrate God's existence, but it produces a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If you take a look at page 18, the bottom of 17, going on to 18, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein has a very, I think, a powerful essay on this topic, entitled "The Source of Faith is Faith Itself," where he discusses the basis of his own personal belief. The greatest source of faith, however, has been God himself. What he means is what we're saying, that when you have an encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so it produces within a person faith that's different. Encounter, of course, has been varied. In part, it has been channeled primarily through the learning of Torah, as we discussed before. Talmud Torah Be'iyun is in many ways the greatest opportunity for an encounter with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. This is no doubt an aspect of the light within it, of which our sages spoke, the light within Torah being Me'orer, the faith, but also through prayer and the performance of mitzvos. Or, if you will, by the halachic regimen in its totality. In part, it has been random. Moments of illumination while getting on a crowded bus or watching children play in the twilight. A person shouldn't expect that they will always be overwhelmed with these feelings of emunah and closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And moreover, Rav Aaron is saying that you don't necessarily always predict where you'll see it. Sometimes watching children play in the park will elicit this type of encounter with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Obviously, it has also been greatly varied in intensity. In its totality, however, whatever the form and content, it has been the ultimate basis of spiritual life. So, a person who's open to seeing HaKadosh Baruch Hu in everyday events, whether it's seeing people, children play, so they'll experience this. Now, like we said, so this only is going to help a person who does experience them. If you're trying to convince a skeptic, so then using philosophical proof is something that at least could potentially be effective. And Rav Lichtenstein addresses this problem as well. He writes, "This will obviously provide little guidance for those to whom attaining encounter is precisely the problem. To those struggling to develop faith, one can, however, prefer first the reassuring assertion of the religious significance of the quest per se. As in the foots of Avraham, they have already become seekers of God. Second, the prospective hope of successful resolution, as the Lord is good unto those who yearn to him and to the soul who seeketh him. And third, the counsel to focus persistently in terms of Coleridge's familiar distinction upon faith rather than belief, upon experiential trust, dependence and submission more than dogmatics. Intellectual assent is normative and essential, but at the personal level, is generally not the key. In the final analysis, the primary human source of faith is faith itself. Now, of course, on a practical level, that means you should do things that will cause a person to deepen their emunah. And as we talked about last week, the mitzvah of Anochi demands that. So that's true whether it's seeking logical proof or studying history or science or going to a kumsitz or studying something or seeing things. But, you know, now a person could say, well, one second, you know, so it's true that when I have certain experiences, it produces within me certain emotions that make me feel Hashem's presence. Fine, but who's to say that those emotions should be trusted? A person can experience false emotions. If you watch a movie, so a person could feel very emotionally attached to the plot, feel very sad when bad things happen, even though you know that those emotions are false because it's just about a bunch of actors and nothing that actually happened. Rav Lichtenstein also addresses that. He says, how do we know we're not delusional? He writes, at the level of rational demonstration, this is of course patently circular. I hold no belief in Anselm's ontological proof, and I recognize the theoretical possibility of self-delusion long before I had ever heard of Feuerbach. Me too. I still haven't heard of him. Existentially, however, nothing has been more authentic than the encounter with our Father, our King, the source and the ground of all being. Nothing more sustaining, nothing more strengthening, nothing more vivifying. A person can question their emotions forever, but does it really make sense to question your emotions? Like we talked about last week, is the are we being epistemologically consistent when we demand a certain type of certainty and proof for God's existence that we don't ask for in anything else? And ultimately, at a certain point in time, you do have to trust your gut. It's also important to remember that these types of experiences contribute to belief. They're not the only aspect of belief. But what emerges from again, this essay, and I think from certainly, I think most people's personal experience, is that faith is personal. And unlike philosophical proofs, which are rigorous, can be shown and demonstrated on paper and the like, this is something that's very personal. To just take a moment, you know, when I think of myself, of what are the basis, what's the basis for my emunah, so I think that there are many things that contribute to it. And again, these aren't arguments that will necessarily convince a skeptic, but at the same time, I think that for someone who does experience them, they're very powerful. So one, as we mentioned before, is Talmud Torah. The can't always explain why, but when one is overwhelmed with the profundity, the brilliance, the depth, and the truth of Torah, so a person really does feel overwhelmed. They feel so small. They feel a sense of certainty that is quite remarkable. In a sense, much more powerful than philosophical or scientific arguments. Again, for me personally, just looking at the incredible hashgacha that I've experienced in my life. So many events in my life, including how I ended up teaching here, how I met my wife, and so many things don't make any sense. They're so unlikely, except when one acknowledges that, and again, looking back on my own experience, it's clear that there's a God holding my hand and directing me along my life. Consideration of the moral perfection that my Rebbeim have reached through Talmud Torah. When I look at Tzaddikim, Talmidei Chachamim, I look at my Rebbeim and I see in them perfection, shlemus, that they've achieved through Torah in a way that I couldn't even imagine. Such true altruism, caring about other people, trying to do what's right, such anava and gedula at the same time. And I recognize that, how did they achieve that shlemus? It's through Torah. And it's also a type of shlemus that I don't think you see anywhere in anyone else besides through Torah. So again, that too produces within me a very powerful feeling of the truth of Torah. It's emes, because look what happens when you have people that devote themselves to Torah. Look who they become. Contemplation about the complexity of the human body, whether it's through studying biology or the awesome providence of God in history, all sorts of ways in which when we observe the universe, we come and see the Ribbono Shel Olam is also something that's very powerful. And finally, encountering with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in prayer, in song, in looking at my children play, all sorts of things produce a level of certainty that's very powerful. Now I just want to go back to one last point on this, which is, again, when you say things like this, when you talk about coming to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through these types of experiential factors, so a person could say that this is like a cop-out. You know, since you can't prove God philosophically and scientifically and the like, so you turn to these sort of subjective experiences. Now, I think that that's wrong on many levels, as we said before. These two produce true certainty. But there's another thing to consider, which is that I think people make a mistake when they say things like, if you can't prove something scientifically, then it's not true. Just I think a nice way to put this, take a look on page 17. This is there was a series of articles in the New York Times on by someone, a philosopher named Gary Gutting, and he interviewed various people on matters of faith and religion, and in his final installment he interviewed himself. And you have it over here on page 17. And I think he sort of succinctly presents the issue. Okay, but at least sort of he's taking like the Kuzari type model. But at least aren't believers who appeal to religious experience and metaphysical arguments admitting what popular atheism so insistently claims, that there's simply no evidence for God's existence, and that alone warrants atheism? There's no scientific evidence. Again, you could question this, but even if you assume it's true, but there are other sorts of evidence. I suspect most atheists think scientific evidence, evidence that ultimately appeals only to empirically observable facts, is the only sort of evidence there is. That may be their assumption, but how do they show that it's correct? It certainly isn't supported by scientific evidence, since that tells us about only what is empirically observable. The question is whether there's something else. The Ramban makes a similar point. This isn't exactly our context, but it's something to consider, which is that in his critique of Greek philosophy, he writes that their short-sightedness in thinking that their only thing that exists are things that could be observed is that the root of their error. Ki hayinu tzrichim lachsom pi hameschak memtava hanimshachim acharei hayivani asher hekhish kol davar zulasi hamurgashlo. That Aristotle denied anything that he couldn't observe, he said it didn't exist. Vehegis da'ato lachshov hu v'talmidah rishayim ki kol inyan shelo hisig elav hu b'svaraso einenu emes. And that's a type of gaiva that oftentimes I think is brought to this discussion. Okay. Now I'd like to address
question. One of danger or perhaps weakness of the experiential argument is what do you do when you see people walking out of church and they're I feel the Lord. What are you supposed to say, their experience is not real because they're serving God in an illegitimate way? Are you saying, no, just like my experience, just like I'm able to tap into some kind of divine realm, that they also are? And then you kind of get into issues of so then I don't know.
It's a good question. Right, it's a very good question. I mean, in the the times of Tanakh, so people presumably had a very close emotional connection to Avodah Zarah as well, right?
Right.
And the fact and that doesn't. Does that have to imply it's true? It's a very good question. I'd like to get back to that. After we do two more things, because I think it does bring up a very very important point. Yeah.
Just the way we presented their message argument about Tom Miller, seemed to imply that the more philosophical argument was susceptible to bias and media, whereas Tom Miller was not.
Okay. It's a very good point. In other words, obviously you could respond that experiential awareness and the like is equally subject to Nagia, and very, very much a person will be able to find support for that which they're trying to prove if that's their perspective. Last week we talked about science. One of the remarkable things about looking to science, for example, just as well, is, you know, how the exact opposite arguments could be proven. Right? To go back to Avodah Zarah. So the Pshim say, on the one hand, Pentisa inacha shamaima verisa sashamesh veserech vesakochavim venidachta vishtachavisa lahem. That looking at the celestial bodies could lead to a rejection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. At the same time, Yeshayahu says, Se'u marom einechem, u'ru mi vara ele. The same words, Pentisa inacha shamaima, Se'u marom einechem. And yet, the two identical experiences and activities produce exact opposite results. How is that possible? And the answer, of course, is it depends on your perspective and what you're seeking. I remember once hearing a shir from Rav Moshe Shapiro on this. And he pointed out, what is the difference? So I don't remember who he quoted, some source in Kabbalah, but said that, it says, Se'u marom einechem is Roshei Tevo Shema. The difference, if you look actually in the Rambam and Avodah Zarah, in Mor Nevuchim, he stresses this a lot, the root of Avodah Zarah is always in the eyes. And in Emunah relates to the Koach of Shmiah, as opposed to the Koach of Re'iah. What's the difference between the Koach of Shmiah and Re'iah? So when it comes to the Koach of Re'iah, Re'iah is the perspective of, Re'iah is the perspective, you know, we say in English, a picture says 1,000 words, right? It's a flash, it's an instant. You could take a picture and come to a perception of the universe at one instant in time. And if that's your perspective on the universe, you look at the universe as it is in front of you, so then one can very easily come to kfira. So if you look at the heavens from the koach of Re'iah, pentisa inacha shamayma ve'isa sashemesh ve'serech ve'sakochavim v'nidachta v'ishtachavisa lahem. But if you come from a perspective of Shmiah, so when it comes to sound, so there's no meaning in sound with each individual thing. But sounds make up syllables, syllables make up words, words make up sentences, sentences make up paragraphs, and only then is meaning conveyed. That's, by the way, the idea of that at Sinai, Ra'u es HaKolos. But anyhow, what's he saying? He's saying if you look at the universe from a perspective of Shmiah, so then you'll come to Akar, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, because you'll say, okay, this is the way it is now, but what was before this? What was before this? What caused that? You'll ask the ultimate questions. If you look at it from a perspective of Re'iah, simply what is and how do I explain what is here now, so then you could come, Adirabba, to a rejection of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And so much of our Emunah is really, and coming to Emunah and how we approach these experiences, everybody has these experiences, but it relates to our perspective. And the fact is that we believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu created within us the ability to see Him, to detect to Him, to relate to Him. That's coming from our neshama. That's emes. And when a person goes ahead and honestly seeks and comes to a hakara of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so that is A, they don't have to question that, but B, it does reflect what they're looking for. David HaMelech Davin, Slave Tahor B'Rali Elokim, Ruach Nachon Chadesh B'Kibi. We daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to strengthen our Emunah. And you could say, well, that doesn't make any sense. Right? What do you... But the answer is no. The answer is, that we do need that help. Let's see one or two more things, and then I'd like to get back to this point and try to answer the questions a little better. There's a phrase that people like to refer to as emuna pshuta. Last Friday night, I was at a Shalom Zachar, so the person I was sitting next to me asked what we're doing in this year. So I said, we're learning in Yanei Emuna. So he said, if you want to learn in Yanei Emuna, you have to speak to the Bubbies and the Zaydis. He told me about his parents, how they both went through Auschwitz and nevertheless left with Emuna. He said, everything else is talk. And they're right. He's right. So what does Emuna Pshuta mean? So if you look at the Alter Rebbe, he says Emuna Pshuta doesn't just mean simple faith in the sense that only a simpleton could have it. It's not simplistic. He actually says the opposite. He says that while Emuna Pshuta is something that's available to the simple, simple meaning they didn't necessarily study philosophy or Kabbalah or the like, a simple person goes ahead and they accept things without trying to understand them. When it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so the more we try to understand HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the more we try to define him, so the more we're bringing him down to our level. Because b'etzem, we can't understand him. But if we try, so what we're going to do is define him in a way that we can't understand, which is false. It's bringing him down. The way the Alter Rebbe says it is, take a look on page. I'm sorry. I thought I had this here also, but I didn't put it. I'll give it to you next time. This is from he says, Hinei Yisrael, Hei ma'aminim b'nei ma'aminim b'Hashem echad, be'emuna pshuta, belishum tam v'das hamusag umuvan alma, v'lama v'eich, u'ma shenilu chachmei ha'mechkar b'sifreihem ha'filosofim, v'katzar matza sichleihem lahasig efes katzehu, echad minei elef, alfei alafim v'chulei, hu yisod pashut, v'chlal munach kavua b'lev kol ish, mi beis Yisrael mikerev v'lev amok, ki yaseid shelo tamus be'emuna kfu'a v'chazaka, v'afilu kol arucho sheba'olam ein mezizim klum. And likewise, he says, this is in Tanya Perek Yud Ches, v'zeu lashon chachma, chachma is koach ma, shehu ma she'enu musag umuvan ve'enu nitfas be'asaga adayin, v'lachein mislabesh ba'or ein sof baruchu, d'les machshava tfisa be'klal, v'lachein kol Yisrael afilu anashim ve'ame ha'aretz, heim ma'aminim ba'ashem, she'emuna hi l'mala min adas, v'ha'asaga, ki pesi yamin l'chol davar, v'arum yavin v'chulei. V'lagabi HaKadosh Baruch Hu, shu l'mala min ha'seichel v'adas, v'les machshava tfisa be'klal, hakol kepesiyim etzlo yisborach. What's he saying? What is a pesi? A pesi is someone who's happy without understanding things. Things work, so, you know, he doesn't bother trying to ask why. If his computer turns on when he presses the button, so he doesn't try to figure out why and how does this computer work. And there's a mila to the perspective of a Chacham. Chacham sees things and he asks, you know, why is this way and not that way? How come? Let me try to understand it. And in the world, in this world, that type of perspective will lead to a much greater understanding of this world. But when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so then adirabba, that attitude will lead you to trying to answer unanswerable questions. And will lead you to a sense of false conclusions. And that's what he says is the maila of emuna pshuta. Emuna pshuta be'etem mishayef everybody. You don't have to be a pesi to be mamin like a pesi. There's a Chassidish saying, Gedola hatamimos me'achachma. Aval kama chacham ha'adam tzarech lios kedei lios tamim. That tamimos is greater than chachma, but you have to be a big chacham to be a tamim. What he's saying over here means that is that to reach this madrega of emuna pshuta, so it's something that if a person engages and thinks about it a lot and is a big chacham, they'll realize its truth. Rambam writes that when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, l'cha dumiyat tehila, the best way of praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with silence. Because the more you know, and the more you understand, the more you recognize you don't know, and you don't understand. And you recognize that any type of description of HaKadosh Baruch Hu is really false. And there, the greatest way of praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not through using words which describe his greatness or his kindness or his strength, but it's silence. L'cha dumiyat tehila. And the same thing the Alter Rebbe is writing with respect to emuna. That and I guess I think that's the same idea that we saw in the Khuzari. That there's a danger in seeking proofs. The danger is, on the one hand, because you might not succeed, but there's another danger, which is even if you do succeed, the God that you've created is not a God that you have a relationship with. And the God that you've created is limited to the God that you're able to conceive of and prove. And the emuna of someone who recognizes that they can understand, again, what the Alter Rebbe writes, we referred to the Chassid Yaivitz last week, who describes how the faith of those who didn't seek proofs at times of Mesiras Nefesh held much more strongly than those who did. So those lead to a much weaker, even if successful, type of proof. The Rav put this as follows, just take a look for a moment on page 17 on top. That's not what I'm looking for. This is in Halachic Mind. The problem of evidence, it's on page 118 in note 58. The problem of evidence in religion will never be solved. The believer does not miss philosophic legitimization. The skeptic will never be satisfied by any cognitive demonstration. In other words, philosophical arguments which are generally presented at two classes of people are basically worthless. Why? Because they're not going to convince the skeptic anyway. Generally speaking, he'll come up with a response to any sort of argument. And in the case of someone who already believes, so they're worthless because you're offering him an argument to something that he knows is true. In some cases, homo religiosus is so overwhelmed by the import of his experience, that he is very distinct, that he very distinctly perceives the reality of his object. He is fully conscious of the existence of the transcendental order. So the Ma'amin who is Ma'amin based off of, again, these experiential aspects. So his perception of the reality of that object is so true that anyway the whatever type of proof or argument that you give him will be of little value. And that's why he says, so there's what's the point? What value is there in seeking this type of argument?
I maybe kind of know the answer to this, but just to clarify, when the Ramban in where he talks about how you always have to ask these questions even if you can't answer them.
Mm-hmm.
So how does that work with what Balatak is saying? That are we searching for the answers even if you know you won't be able to find them?
It's a very good question, you know. And again, I think you see that tension in the Rambam all the time. The Rambam is constantly reminding us of how little we can actually understand of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and at the same time, he thinks there's a mitzvah Yediyas Hashem and a mitzvah to understand Him to the extent that we possibly can. So I think the answer is, as long as you're honest in accepting what you can and can't understand, so then it's valuable to understand what you're capable of. At the same time, if you come to a conclusion that you could understand more than you're capable of, so then that will lead to a false understanding. Rambam writes, that's exactly why Moshe Rabbeinu was chosen for his mission. Because when he encountered HaKadosh Baruch Hu at the Snebo Erba Eish, so he covered himself. He turned away. He recognized his own limitations. He had that humility. And precisely because he had that humility, so he was able to ultimately achieve a knowledge of HaKadosh Baruch Hu unparalleled by any person ever to exist. So the answer is exactly as you're saying. If your attitude is, since I can't, you know, I can't understand everything, I shouldn't even start. So that's the attitude of fools. And I don't think that the idea of Emunah Pshuta, at least the way the Alter Rebbe is presenting it, is intended to preclude that possibility. After all, you know, if not through a philosophy, through Kabbalah and the like, so there's a tremendous drive to try to understand what could be understood. It's just that the person who learns Kabbalah understands that whatever he does glean from Kabbalah isn't the whole picture. It's only, you know, the way you would put it is, you know, it's not the Ein Sof. So does that mean that you shouldn't try to get something? No. You should try to get what you could get, but you also have to understand and accept and acknowledge your limitations. All right, we're out of time. I did want to get back to one point. I also do want to go on next week. Well, Be'ezras Hashem, I want to go back to the point. Maybe we'll talk about it when we talk about Avodah Zarah. But the point that you brought up about how do you know when experiences and emotions are true and when they're false. And the fact that false emotions exist is that a pircha on all emotions. So, Be'ezras Hashem, we will return to that question. Okay. Have a good Shabbos, everyone. Just another reminder. For